All right, welcome to episode 70 of the Ninja Consultant Podcast.
Ooh.
Probably. We are now married.
Ha.
So our podcast will probably be like way boring now because all married people are boring. That's what my brother says.
Yep. Hi, so Matt. We ask you, the listeners, is it possible to have enough cupboard space?
And how much for a really good ladder, like a step ladder? Anyway, so yes, we're back from our marriage that was not in space, but in a Boeing 747.
Except it was a 727.
At the height of between 24,000 and 64,000 feet.
Nope, that's totally wrong.
What are the feet heights? I don't have them memorized.
The parabola was between 36,000 and 24,000 feet.
36,000 and 24,000?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because people often ask that. They're like, how high does the plane go? And I can't remember any number, like, ever. Like, if it's a two-digit number or a three-digit number, I just forget instantly. Yeah.
You can't remember my birthday.
Nope. Now I remember, though. It's November 28th.
Woo-hoo. Oh, now everyone knows.
I know. Uh-oh. He's an old man.
Anyway.
So you're going to tell the nice people what it was like to spend $60,000.
Aw, man. More than that. It was a hoot and a half.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
It was awesome. It was awesome to the point where it's kind of embarrassing because $5,400 or $5,200 plus tax is a lot of money. But the zero-G experience was totally awesome and totally worth it. I don't know if it was worth $5,000.
Well,
maybe worth $2,000.
For $5,000,
you could buy like two computers or like one super good computer with a lot of like processing speed. And that computer would be good for
vacation
like
for two people for like a week, maybe more.
You could go to Japan at least twice.
But you would not be flying at all. The amount of flying during that time would be 0%.
Right.
Whereas
of like floating.
For that much money, your flying would be 100%. For about 8 minutes. So
it's really,
these are the times in which we live.
Right. It's really amazing. It's like you feel initially as if someone has, there is a physics, like regular physics, with just a switch on the wall and someone has just turned it off because whatever. Now all the rules are off. Woo.
Hooray.
Or like if you ever had a dream where you're flying, it's exactly like that, except for inside of a plane. So it's really loud and then you don't really have a lot of space to fly
because there are other people
and a lot more hitting your head on the ceiling than usually happens in flying dreams.
That's true. There is a ceiling there.
Yeah. And they tell you at the beginning, they're like, don't kick because you're just going to injure the other people and it doesn't do anything because it's not, you know, because people react like they're in the water. And if you're in the water, kicking will keep you floating. But if you're just floating in the air, kicking doesn't really have an effect.
And it makes you look like an idiot.
Right.
And I should know this because I was kicking the whole time because
it was impossible
to
stop.
My mind, everyone else I think was fine. No one had this problem but me, where my mind insisted that I kick to stay afloat. Although,
I understand, though. I was kicking during some of it. Like, then you can really see that the dress is pants.
Yeah.
I would like to emphasize, I cannot emphasize this enough, that the dress does not have pants underneath, as reported by CBS News, in there only the text portion. If you watched the live interview, I said specifically, no, pants are part of the dress. The dress is pants. It's not even really a dress. But in their text, they're like, she wore trousers underneath her dress. And then that got re-reported on 10,000 news sites across the world. So,
yeah,
whatever.
His
last name is spelled with an E.
Yeah, whatever. If this experience has taught us anything, it's don't trust the media.
Right. Or just make sure you've got it 100% correct, whatever you're telling to Reuters or CBS.
Well, even so.
Even then, they messed up?
Yeah, well,
the British were sometimes reported as costing like $16,000.
They attributed, it was 16,000 pounds, I think, and they attributed quotes to us that we never said.
Oh, like what?
And, like, whatever.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, that was where you were talking about the one small step for nuptials or whatever the hell.
I don't remember this article.
Well, it was the Sun.
God.
And
they're not very reputable.
The Sun, no, it's not the bastion of credibility, anyway.
In journalism, yeah.
Don't trust the press. Yeah, it was awesome. It was everything we expected, I think.
Yeah, and more.
And more.
It was great. Also, and, Richard Garriott was super great and hilarious, especially on the wedding day. Like, he busted out graph paper like any gamer would and started drawing our positions in the plane to demonstrate how this is going to work, which made me, like, laugh really hard in a seemingly inappropriate way. Like, it was not clear what I was laughing at, but I was like, this is how he would draw out any gaming scenario.
Yeah. And he was a super nice guy to work with, and really went out of his way to make everyone comfortable.
Yeah, and before the flight, he gave his little like speech about being in space, some of which we'd already heard, like his PowerPoint.
Well, it was, if you listen to the Google lecture series, he has an episode on there about what it was like to be on the International Space Station, and that was largely the same lecture that he presented, but that's the one that he presents everywhere, all over the place now, to anyone who's willing to listen.
Oh, we got to break this podcast at like 11:50 or so to watch the International Space Station.
Oh, yeah, so we can wave at the six guys up there.
Yeah. Yeah, like they can see anything except for a big white dot where New York City is.
They'll see us.
Uh-huh. Where? Anyway, when we were in Florida, we also got to watch a rocket launch. We stayed at Gerald's house from Anime World Order.
Yeah, kudos to Gerald, who allowed us to spend most of a week in his cool, swanky pad.
And he helped us out with like a lot of stuff. Like when I was like, can you come and pick Noah up from the hair salon like right now? He was really good about that.
Yeah.
And was like, yes, I'll be there in a minute.
And he was.
Or can you store these flowers in the coldest place in your house under a vent? And he figured it out.
Yep.
I'm also supposed to give a shout out to the 057 Club.
Oh, yes. Let's not forget the 057 Club.
My friend from college, whose high school friend was, she went to school to be a florist, helped us tie little crystals onto the bouquet so that they would float out and look really cool. But we didn't get the video back until like a couple of days ago. So it's kind of hard to see the crystals. And we haven't gotten the pictures back yet.
Yeah.
Like the official pictures. Everyone else's pictures from the flight are online. But like when we have really nice pictures, I'm sure that will be on there. And I'll do like a blog post about the bouquet. The wedding website is zerogravitywedding.com. Oh, we got interviewed by two shock jocks shows and one more reputable shock jock show.
I wouldn't call him more reputable. He seemed to be the shockiest jock.
The Two Dorks one?
Not the Two Dorks one, the Jay Thomas one.
Oh, I was calling Two Dorks more reputable.
Oh,
and Jay Thomas
maybe.
Like less reputable.
Yeah, he was kind of a dick.
Jay Thomas was kind of a dick.
But from that's his job.
He was on Mork and Mindy. How can he be like a jerk to people?
I don't know what you're trying to say there.
I don't know either.
Whatever.
Right. So on all the websites where this has been reported, like the same comments come up over and over again, whether it's Kotaku or in a Korean website or a British website. It doesn't matter. The same. Or if you're being interviewed by a shock jock, they ask the same questions like, yuck, yuck, how long for a zero gravity divorce? And then followed by, so did you consummate like the honeymoon? Right away?
Yeah, well, did you consummate the marriage?
Did you consummate the marriage? It's like, yes, my parents were standing right there, like 3 feet away. Yes, yeah, we consummated the marriage.
We totally did
gravity. Like, we had time to take our pants off. No, no. Get your mind out of the gutter, internet.
I was wondering if we were going to do it, too. Not really.
Uh-huh. You want to talk more about that?
No.
About getting it up in space?
It's hard to do, apparently.
Might not be possible. According to Wired and...
well, NASA has no official position on whether or not it is possible to have an erection in space.
But the Russians joke around that it's not possible.
Yeah, apparently it's very difficult because of the fluid shift, yes.
Viagra would not help, according to one guy interviewed in Wired magazine. So it would not have been possible to consummate the marriage in zero gravity.
But, especially in 30-second parabolas, that's a lot of pressure.
Pressure to perform.
Yeah.
Yeah, and between parabolas, you feel twice Earth's gravity, or like 1.5 times or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a weird feeling. You just suddenly get heavier and heavier. But no one in our wedding party got sick. We did not also internet with your mind in the gutter. We did not throw up in each other's mouths.
Bleah!
That did not happen.
I'm
Everyone
kind of
was fine.
Disappointed, actually, that as soon as news footage was posted online, someone didn't edit the vomit in. Like,
oh, it's because we haven't put up the nice pictures yet. I don't know.
They didn't shoop us vomiting into each other's mouths and then post it on 4chan.
Or Fark.com.
Or Fark.
Consider Fark.
Bleah. Didn't happen.
Not at all.
Too bad.
But some of our friends did see, because it was Reuters. Am I even pronouncing that right?
Reuters, yeah.
Okay. Reuters, our photo from our wedding ended up in the elevator news kind of service, which is if you work somewhere in a very tall building, which is more often something that happens in New York than anywhere else in the country, sometimes there'll be like a little TV screen in your elevator that runs by like a little tiny news clips. Sometimes it's called like the captive network, which is so terrible. Like, it's true, but like, ouch. And they like that was one of the news clips that came up. And so one of our friends was very surprised to see us in the elevator. And another friend, like, he heard we were in the elevator, so he just kept riding it until he could watch our news.
Riding clip. It up and down, watching the little TV in there. Yeah. Which I think is super funny.
It is pretty funny. And it was mentioned on a bunch of TV stations, and where they just didn't even like interview us or contact us in any way or form. They just repeated what was in the New York Daily News.
Yeah. On the BBC.
Apparently reading the newspaper on TV. That's cool.
NHK did a little thing for us.
Yeah.
We've been interviewed now by...
Oh, the BBC thing was a countdown
Spiegel.
Of 10 unbelievable things, and we were like number 10. I don't know what the other 9 were.
Yeah,
I just barely
qualifying.
Exactly. We just made the list.
You will almost believe this thing. Number 10. There was some Russian newspaper contacted us for an interview.
Yeah.
By email.
That's kind of offensive questions. Like, don't you regret spending the most important day of your life like this? I'm like, no.
I don't know, Russia.
This is exactly how I planned my wedding, and it went off without a hitch. Like, why would I
regret Vladimir
this?
Putin?
Oh, snap.
Oh, snap, Russia.
Apparently, Russia's space program, though, is, like, much better than ours at this point. In the last 10 or 15 years, it's gotten way good. So, like, Garriott, who rode with the Russians up to space, was saying how their shuttle launches all go off on time. And there are no accidents, and there haven't been any accidents in many, many years. But American shuttle launches, like, there was going to be a shuttle launch while we were in Florida, but it got scrubbed, and they get scrubbed all the time. So, because of whatever, they want it to be perfect and don't want anyone to die, so they need everything to be absolutely right. So it means the shuttle will be scheduled to launch many, many times and then canceled.
Yeah.
Not the Russians.
It's kind of an embarrassment for the American space establishment. All right. The Russians have a very simple, they don't have a space shuttle. They have just a little sort of space capsule, space launch mechanism that just gets you up there. It's not meant to do anything really beyond ferry people back and forth between the International Space Station.
It just gets up there. It doesn't have to land.
It lands in the ocean.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. And then
so
you have to get out of there.
It's not reusable. It just goes up and comes back.
That's why it's better. Because you don't have to repair it all the time.
Well, that's why they are able to launch with so few problems. Because the shuttle is designed to do a million and one things. And so all of those systems have to be maintained, even if you're not going to use it for any of those purposes in your mission. Whereas the Soyuz, it just goes up and comes down. There are far fewer systems to maintain, far fewer things that can break. And it's a very simple function.
Like some kind of space yo-yo.
Like some kind of space yo-yo, except that would be the space elevator, to which I have to ask you.
It's an off-string trick.
How much does the bot weigh?
Ah, that's an inside joke that only you and I know about.
Too bad. Or you can explain it to the world, or you can cut it.
Yeah, I'm not gonna. All right.
Fine.
Whatever. But, you know, this is a podcast about anime.
What?
It is. We were going to record a show. I was going to record my panels at Anime Boston because I gave several. I gave the Manga Genre Madness panel, which went over really well. There was no description in the program guide. People just showed up and had a great time.
Yeah.
And I did the manga, Please Save My Manga panel with other PopCultureShock.com writers. And we talked about canceled manga series or, you know, endangered manga series. And I think that went over well, even though it was like the first panel in the morning on a Friday, which meant like getting to Boston really early and doing all this stuff. Oh, and we stayed with our Boston friends who are really good cosplayers. And
yeah, thumbs up to them too.
Yeah, thanks to Regan for driving us around everywhere.
Yeah.
And had many adventures on Boston public transit. But what was the other? Did we do another panel?
I think it was just those two, wasn't it?
Yeah. But yes, we won't be doing...
Wait, no. The food manga panel, too.
No, that was part of the Manga Genre Madness.
Oh,
like, sometimes
right.
I make it its own panel, but since I had an hour...
Yeah, you're right.
...thing. And, like, Daryl was there and did panels that we didn't get to go to. And Mike Toole, who writes for Otaku USA and also, I think, Anime News Network, he gave a really good panel about the Journey to the West that was adaptations of it in anime form and in live action. That was really good. But his computer, like, busted apart. Anyway, I would have recorded more of these, but when we were setting up for the first panel of the day, my mixer, like, I was getting it hooked up, and I was getting everything where I could almost patch into the recording system when suddenly all the lights on the board went out and they did not come back on.
Yep, the magic smoke got away.
But our friend Chris bought us a new mixer as a wedding gift, which is remarkable because he's losing his job. I'm like, I wish Chris wouldn't spend that
kind that's kind of how I felt too. However, he would like to request that we do a webcomics show so he can showcase his webcomics and discuss other webcomics that he reads and likes online.
Oh, he wants to be on the show?
Yeah, you can expect to see, or rather hear that in the future.
That's fine. We're going to sell Chris's comic at Otakon. So we're going to be at Otakon. I think our table numbers are 20 or something like that in the 500 row.
Okay.
Where I will sell a... I might sell a very limited number of t-shirts that say I'm a total weeaboo. I think we have some medium Ninja Consultant shirts left. Some crappy I Survived the Filler Arc buttons for the low, low price of 25 cents, which you could also potentially order over our website, I guess, if you wanted an I Survived the Filler Arc button. I think it would cost you 50 cents. No, postage is like 41 cents now. It would cost you like a solid dollar.
If you're at Otakon, you can find us. We'll sell you some swag.
Yeah, and come by and say hi. And so we're not like miserable in the Artist Alley basement.
Yeah, what's this wee stuff? You know I'm going to be stuck there, and you're going to go off and do your own thing.
I don't have any panels.
It's always
they rejected all my panels.
Oh, good. In that case, you can be stuck there.
I might be on the Anime Reviewed the Right Way panel, maybe, courtesy of Mike Toole.
Oh, fair enough.
But I don't know when it will be yet. We might get to interview some guests. I hope we can interview Frederick Schott, because he's awesome.
Ah, yes, that would be nice. I would like to talk to him.
And there are some other Japanese guests that there are even new ones that I didn't even request an interview of yet, but whatever. So that's Otakon coming up.
Yep.
Will I even have this show edited before Otakon?
Who knows?
If I don't edit it, I guess. We can go Dave and Joel style and just not edit.
Yeah, because we have such a great rapport now that we're married.
That's right. That's one of the magic powers that our rings give us.
One of the many.
Yeah. They're rings with meteorite in them from Chris Plouffe. But I think we talked about that on the pre-wedding episode.
Yeah, we did.
Plugging the designers again. I have to learn conversational Japanese by October to get a potential dream job. But I also recently started a new internship at a publisher because there's like no animation going on right now in New York City. Like a lot of animation studios kind of closed. So I haven't had a job in like 6 months. Except for the freelance writing that I do on the side.
Yeah, that's been...
Which, consequently, I've gotten like half as much freelance writing this year as last year. I want to blame the recession, sort of.
You can blame the recession, but it because we were doing so much wedding stuff, it was almost...
There wasn't really time to do
anything. Yeah, it was almost, I don't know, convenient.
Yeah.
But now most wedding stuff is done.
Except for the receptions,
one in New York and one in Michigan.
Right.
But the one in Michigan, Aaron's mom is handling, and the one in New York, that one we still have to do.
Yeah, so we're trying to think of, like, an appropriate, like, space-related venue. We just want to do, like, a dessert reception with a bar. So there aren't, like, space-themed bars in New York. I guess we could contact, like, Hayden Planetarium, but I think they're really expensive.
We could do Mars 2112 again.
No. The food there was so disgusting.
Oh, well, we're not having food. We're just having dessert, right?
I guess so. Will they let you bring it outside dessert?
I thought you said
it was really nasty in there.
I would not go back. You could not really
okay,
pay
so
me
Okay, so
not
enough. Mars 2112. No. Somewhere else.
No. But we have still miraculously been watching anime and reading manga.
Somehow. Oh, because I had to write about it for Otaku USA?
Because
I was writing like an import report about Gwyn Saga and K-On, the one about the cute band that's filled with girls. And we also watched Moonlight Mile so I could review it. I think we talked about that in the last episode.
I think we did too.
Or we'd have finished watching at that point?
I don't know.
Which I still haven't reviewed for the website. For Otaku USA website.
Oh.
You should check that out as soon as I
You should do that.
You. I will.
I guess.
Well, yeah, because the articles pay more, so I write those first.
Mm.
But Noah laughs at the title Moonlight Mile because on the DVD cover, they have kind of Earth rising, and it covers up the bottom rung of the E in Mile.
So it looks
Mile.
Like Moonlight MILF, which is very
That's
funny.
Disgusting.
But also not totally inapplicable to the series. because
he does. He does date a mom.
Yeah,
like a single mother.
He gets a lot of action. What's his face?
Yeah. Oh, there's only what's it?
The guy who's not named Lost Man.
Yeah.
Which is a silly name. Goro.
It's crappy.
Goro.
Oh, yeah, Goro. Yeah.
Yeah.
Goro and Lost Man.
Yeah. So that's kind of a ridiculous series about going to the moon. But hey, at least they're going to the moon, you know?
Yeah. But it's like a salaryman fantasy, according to Ed.
Yeah, of going to the moon.
Or of having a job that's not your crappy job.
Or it is your crappy job. It's just on the moon.
Right. Like the first half of the first disc of the series is all like people almost dying in work-related accidents and then like getting saved by Goro using a giant crane to lift something off of someone. And it's like episode after episode.
Yeah,
like
we're getting sued.
There's a
lawsuit over a work accident.
Oh, that's a really long arc, though, where it's like an extended arc about whether or not the robots were safe and someone embezzling money. And
yeah, so that's very interesting.
Goro gets laid and gets to the bottom of things. Like
that's right.
Every episode.
Until he's like a smug, space-exploring Golgo 13.
No, he's a working-class dude, though.
Yeah, except instead of... No, he's nothing like Golgo 13.
No,
I was just thinking how... He gets laid a lot. Yeah, he gets laid a lot.
And he's really built.
Yep.
And in those two ways, he's like Golgo 13. In other ways, he talks too much.
Way too much.
Has a really public persona.
Drinks too much.
Yeah.
And is generally a lout.
Yeah.
But he's a lovable lout.
A lovable lout.
You can't help it. There's just something about that guy.
And if there's a girl of childbearing age in the series, she's going to sleep with him.
Yep.
Guaranteed. Even
maybe,
if it takes
maybe
many
more
episodes.
Than once.
Yeah.
And then he leaves her. And she's like, man, am I glad that I had that experience.
No, maybe the one chick who might be evil, but not really. Even she will eventually sleep with Goro.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. Well, yeah. And she does.
And then there's also a spoiler shadow NASA, evil NASA. I think that's the greatest part of the show. It doesn't come up until disc two.
Well, yeah. The opening sequence would have you believe that this is a big mobile suit. Action series with
battling on the moon
with powered armor
does
battling.
Not happen until episode disc two, and even then they only get to the moon.
Yeah,
they're not even on the moon
yet. It hasn't happened at all yet.
So for the season one part one box set, they do not even make it to the moon.
There's no fighting on the moon
except for in the first episode.
So that's a reverse spoiler. You're spoiled in that it doesn't happen.
We let you know it doesn't happen.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. I think that's the best kind of spoiler. Like, you know, if you're watching Beck Mongoling Chop Squad and the theme song says, "We were made to hit in America," I would like to tell you they do not make it to America until the last episode. And I'm not joking.
That's fair.
They don't even know how to play guitars until, like, episode 15.
Takes a little while.
Takes a long time to make it to America. And then even then, it's a series of photo montages.
Right.
Like, that's not the important... You've missed the point. Don't take the theme song quite so literally.
So then there's Gwyn Saga. Which
we had a whole episode about Gwyn Saga, which you can listen to.
Not the Gwyn Saga anime, though.
We talked about the books.
We talked about the books.
Right, so now we can talk about the anime.
Yeah, well, I was gonna.
Do it.
Well, fine. Gwyn Saga looks really good, and I'm actually kind of surprised that they spend so much time and effort on the animation, and it's pretty good.
The animation is really quality. It's like Morabito or 12 Kingdoms or Record of the Lotus Wars.
It's much better than Record of the Lotus Wars.
Yeah. Well, Record of the Lotus Wars has a lot of like...
Except for the first two
detailed
episodes.
Artwork. And we mean the OVA, not like the TV series.
Right.
But no, I just... Like Morabito or 12 Kingdoms are better examples where like the animation is really good and it's just like a realistic looking action adventure show. And you should watch Morabito.
Yeah.
And
we should watch
12 Kingdoms.
Because we haven't seen the whole thing.
Yeah, we've only watched like the first DVD worth. I think Media Blasters is putting out, and they sometimes show it on Adult Swim.
But Gwyn moves along at a very nice clip.
It's really fast.
They've already gone through most of the books published in English.
Yeah.
And
I think that it's only going to cover the five books that are out in English.
Yeah,
That's what I heard, but it's going so fast. Like
that makes sense. Well, that's sort of the first
six episodes cover like three books.
Well, that's fine.
Does that mean the
it's not a super long series.
The last 12 episodes you're going to cover. It's supposed to be like 26, according to Anime News Network. So does that mean the last 12 episodes cover two books?
Don't look at me. Although it's possible. No, there's a lot of stuff that hasn't been covered yet. Oh. I think that they're only maybe to the end of book two.
It's true.
There are
like 10 episodes of just some tribes arguing.
Right.
That'd be really boring.
But they do a really nice job with the monsters, which is primarily what I'm interested in.
Monsters?
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of good monsters even in just the first episode.
You're guaranteed a cool fight in every episode.
That's true, pretty much.
Like, there's a duel with some guy, or some high-level fighters duke it out, or Gwen fights a monster. Like, every episode there's going to be some action, but there's also a lot of serious plot. Which is great, because it's the opposite of, like, a shonen series where, like,
there's in order a lot of to crappy
complete
fighting.
One fight, it's like eight episodes.
And you're not even interested
in the outcome. There's no plot going on during that time.
So what else? We were watching...
K-On.
K-On. Or Yeon.
Why?
What I like to say.
Why would you call it that?
Why would I call it Yeon? Because nothing happens.
Yeon? Oh, I see. No, they start a band.
Yeah, they start a band.
They learn how to play their instruments.
And they sleep
slightly
a lot.
Slightly faster than
and,
Beck.
And they eat sweets.
Oh, they eat desserts in every episode.
And they do play a little. And sometimes they wear different costumes. Look, people, this is exactly what you're getting.
It's kind of a moe show.
Ahead.
It's a moe show based on a four-panel comic that's heavily marketed to otaku. So it's something like, if Asumanga Daioh wasn't funny and they started a band, that's what this would be.
Yeah, and they turned the moe dial up.
A little bit, to 11.
To 11.
Exactly. So, like in the first episode, there are like two girls who really want to start a band, and they take over their school's light music club, which apparently that's an inaccurate translation. It kind of means pop music club. And they recruit a keyboardist who happens to be the daughter of a music company fortune guy. So she's like, her magic power is being rich. And then they need a lead guitarist. And they put out an ad for it. And the girl who answers, like, doesn't really know how to play guitar at all. And she seems to be, like, functionally retarded. She, like, flashes back to playing castanets in kindergarten and doing a good job. And she's like, I should join this club. And when she shows up, they're so grateful to have another member. They just feed her a bunch of cake. And then after a while, they're like, do you know how to play guitar? She's like, no. But they're just glad to have her. So.
Yeah, and she learns, although it is a sad process whereby she can only really keep one thing in her mind at a time.
Yeah, so when it comes time to like decide who's going to sing, she can't both sing and play guitar.
And when she has to study for exams, she forgets how to play.
Yeah,
so.
And the club almost dies because she is not failing.
Oh, isn't that so adorable? She's such an idiot.
No, the adorable part is how the bass player is really embarrassed of things and like doesn't want to sing because she's embarrassed, but isn't being embarrassed really sexy, I guess?
No.
No, not really. But the bass player is adorable. Like, I think she's really cute.
Yeah.
It's a cute show about nice girls. Where nice things happen.
Nice things happen.
It's good to watch. It's good to watch while you're hungover
cakes.
Because there's not a lot of movement and everyone looks pretty nice.
And I guess their advisor's backstory was pretty funny.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Where like their club advisor was in the old music club and she doesn't want them finding her album and playing their tapes because back then it was more like a metal band.
Yeah, her embarrassing past. So it's not without redeeming value, but it's not anything
parts.
To write home about either.
It's really popular in Japan.
Well, like everything else that I'm not terribly interested
you're
in.
You're not interested.
Yeah.
Drops
of God?
Oh, yeah. We've been watching that Drops of God live action drama. Oh, my gosh. This is based on a manga about a wine tasting guy. Wait, do you want to describe this?
A wine tasting guy.
No, well, he's not.
Sommelier.
Really. He's the son of a famous
wine
critic.
Yes, a wine critic.
But he wouldn't drink any wine when he turned 20 because he was like, that's dad's thing. And in order to rebel, he like did not drink wine.
And because his father's love of wine was so great that he apparently dismissed his wife and didn't even
go to her deathbed
because he was preoccupied with his wine tasting duties.
When the series starts when the protagonist's father dies and his will has bizarre stipulations in it where he has a wine cellar or like this collection that's worth over $2 million or something like that. And it will either be willed to his son or to another guy who he happened to adopt a few days before he died. And the other guy is a wine critic himself. And he has to compete with the man's son. I forget everyone's names all the time.
Yeah,
but
I haven't really picked them up, but...
So they're in this competition where their father has left a series of clues, each one describing a different wine. And so each, whatever month or a couple weeks, the people reading his will, I guess it's lawyers, whoever's running it, reads a description of a wine that the father has left, and then both men have to go and find a wine that matches that description. And whoever's correct the most times, finding the 13 so-called apostles of wine... each of the delicious really ones called apostles. Maybe.
I thought there were only six.
I forget.
But whatever.
I could maybe have gotten the plot wrong. It's based on a manga series, which I've bought like three volumes of. My hope is to eventually have a Drops of God tasting party.
Well, which will be delicious, but...
We can only purchase like two wines from the series because they're pricey kinds.
It's like a sort of like a shonen series where combat is done by wine tasting.
Which is awesome.
This is not something that would ever fly in America,
no,
I don't think.
It's so great.
It's hilarious to the extent... The extent to which he
summons Bacchus.
Well, that's
like a magical girl.
He doesn't
girl.
Really summon Bacchus.
I know, but for the like first episode,
that's
they
not
play
true.
That out.
He doesn't summon Bacchus like a magical girl.
That's in my doujin, he will.
Oh man, I do not want to read that doujin. Look, anyway. Maenads and Bacchante, you know that's fine. But
what I like to play up in my manga,
I don't
want to
read your gayos. Gayos.
No, it wouldn't be gay. It would gay-ass. Be a magical girl parody, and then he's also drinking really disgusting wine. So I, in my food
oh,
manga
I thought
panel,
that this was
no, it's just going to parody in every
wine possible. Critic, Bacchus slash.
Ooh, that's a new angle. So, what's remarkable that I point about this that I point out in my food manga panel, which is also part of Manga Madness. Of any cons who might want to have us as guests doing this panel. There's more than one wine sommelier manga. There's another series called La Sommelier about a woman who wants to become a sommelier. And that runs in a more popular magazine than I think Drops of God. I don't even know what magazine Drops of God runs in. La Sommelier is by the same author who did a shorter series called Le Sommelier about a guy who's a sommelier. And there are lots and lots of manga about people who work at bars, or a manga about drinking alcohol, or that anime called Bartender that was one of our favorites that we haven't really finished watching yet.
Or the one about coffee.
Right. Well, that one about coffee is only like one or two volumes.
Oh, okay.
But it gets really specific. But why Drops of God is interesting among wine manga or whatever, or wine criticism in general, is that it's run by a pair of siblings who are wine enthusiasts and who've written the script, and they like to review wine in a way like usually wine review language uses the same set of terms, like they say something tastes nutty or has chocolate overtones or tastes like berries or whatever, and they want to throw that out the window and make wine descriptions more interesting. So in the first volume, there's a scene where they describe a certain kind of wine as tasting like being in a Queen concert, where like the guitar has like, you know, dark undertones, and then there are sweeter overtones that are like Freddie Mercury's vocals. So they're using these colorful descriptions. It comes off a little bit weirder in the live action series because it's like a long description of like viewing the Mona Lisa, or like an even longer anecdote about like, it's like you're in a steamy forest and then you cross a bridge over a lake and there are these yellow butterflies, and then the bridge takes you to a little island. Everything is perfect.
It's kind of shenanigans because
they also solve people's problems through wine.
It's to suggest that whenever someone drinks the wine, they have the same experience, the same sort of synesthetic experience of having all of their other senses engaged. So if you drink this wine, you will see the Mona Lisa.
Well, I want to try
and
that
so
wine.
Maybe
kind of the point of the show.
Maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe if I drank that wine,
you would see the Mona Lisa.
I would see the Mona Lisa.
That wine costs
$250. I'd be like, shut my mouth. Never mind. That's true. Yeah. This wine is the Mona Lisa.
That'd be awesome.
I'd be surprised. But maybe I just don't have a finely tuned palate.
They've written about this particular manga, I think, in the New York Times and in a South African wine journal. So that's how I kind of found out about it before it became a live action series. The guy in it has kind of the metrosexual hair. He's a cutie.
Yeah, whatever.
You're totally lost in that aspect.
Yeah.
Also, his competing wine critic makes a hilarious sound and like just pours wine all over his face periodically, which I find extremely amusing. Like some kind of terrible orgasm.
When he's about to come up with tasting language, he'll drink it and
he's having an experience that you know you will not have when you drink that wine.
Hopefully.
Were we also going to talk about 20th century wine?
Indeed.
that we were, the New York Asian Film Festival is going on right now, but by the time you listen to this, it'll probably be over or almost over. Where it's, if you go to like subwaycinema.com, it is a great film festival we go to every year, and I plug all the time on this show and also possibly on other shows where I leave voicemail. But one reason it's significant is because they are a big proponent of showing movies based on manga, and they tend to be shows that sell out. Like, I saw the Death Note live action movies way before they were released by Viz Pictures, because they were shown first in the New York Asian Film Festival. And I saw the... I didn't see the Nana movie that way, but did like the Ping Pong movie that was like an audience award winner once.
Yeah, you didn't see that one either.
I still haven't seen it. But a lot of times Viz Films will pick up the audience winner. They didn't last year, and I wish they would, because the audience winner was amazing. It was called Zen Zen Daijobu, or Fine Totally Fine, and it's really funny. And it got picked up for distribution in Great Britain, but not here. That's really irritating.
Which sucks, because...
No, I didn't see it.
I didn't see it, and I'd really like to.
Yeah, it was hilarious. So if you're in Britain and watching this, or I guess Eeper could buy it and watch it, and then send us a copy. Except for I don't think shipping for him would be any cheaper than if I just bought it. Don't do that. He's sending us something else for our wedding. I don't know what, though.
Well,
it hasn't arrived yet.
That's very nice of him.
Yeah, he doesn't have to do that. Someone else from like Anime Pulse and other people like donated for our wedding. Thanks if you sent a PayPal donation. And Soar?
Yeah, way to go.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I think Dara might have.
We could. She did, but...
everyone's name gets on a big thank you list.
Thank you everyone, and someone in particular who made an enormous donation. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, we're going to take him out for a drink or something.
Yes. Yes, at least.
As long as he's in New York.
Yeah.
Right. But not dinner, because then it would be wasting the money. I think that we figured out. Right. So, this year, one of the big manga films that showed at the New York Asian Film Festival is 20th Century Boys, Parts 1 and 2. Part 3 comes out in Japan in August. And they were hinting at the festival that maybe Part 3 will be ready for them by the time New York Anime Festival comes around in September. That's nothing confirmed yet. It's not official, but they're probably definitely going to show it there.
Yeah, probably definitely.
Yeah. So we've been reading the 20th Century Boys manga only in English as it comes out. So Noah and I have read volumes 1 through 3. 3 just came out really recently. And the first movie covers way beyond what's in volume 3. Like... It rolls a bunch of plot points together.
Hmm.
Do you want to talk about it?
Or yeah.
Should we say what the plot is about?
Well, yeah.
Do it.
Who, me?
Yeah.
So, in 1970, there are a bunch of kids from the neighborhood, and they all hide in this grass hideout that they make for themselves. And as kids from the neighborhood are wont to do, they invent sort of a fantasy world for themselves where there is a legion of evil that uses various mechanisms to wreak havoc on the world.
I mean, they call it the Book of Prophecy, like on the cover. They're saying they think this is what will happen at the end of the century, but they make up like a fictitious
story. Well, but they don't really believe that it's going to happen. This
no,
is something
not really.
They're
fiction.
Just playing. They're kids.
Yeah.
And they envision themselves as heroes saving the world from these horrible forces. Flash forward to, 27 years in the future. And this group of friends, many of them are sort of in the same neighborhood, but they're all older and kind of washed up. And
kind of pathetic.
Even though at the time, rock music was really big and seemed like it was going to change the world, nothing changed. And they all grew up and assumed relatively unimportant lives. One of them, the protagonist, if
Kenji.
There is one, Kenichi.
Kenji.
Kenji?
Kenji.
I thought it was Kenichi.
No.
Kenji? All right.
Kenji.
Kenji. Works at a convenience store.
Well, he's converted his family's former independent alcohol store into a convenience store recently.
Yeah, because times were not very good for them. He attempted to become a rock star, failed miserably.
His band even got on TV. I think he made it pretty far. It just didn't work out.
Well,
a TV concert.
He's a wash-up now.
Yeah, now he's quit the band.
He has to take care of his sister's daughter. His sister, who sort of...
She just dropped her baby on the
family. Despite being extraordinarily responsible up to this point, had a kid, dropped her off at home and disappeared. So now he and his mother run the convenience store, and there are strange happenings in the world.
There's a weird religious cult with a symbol that is getting really widespread, and so there's like a support group for people whose family members have like joined this cult and stuff.
And there's a deadly outbreak of disease, first in Africa, then in
San Francisco.
Is it San Francisco next?
And then London.
And this strange symbol, which if you know anything about 20th Century Boys, you have seen the symbol of
it's
the
like a
hand in an eye.
It's like a hand pointing up with an eye drawn on it, and then an eye drawn around
This is the
it.
Symbol of the cult, and it turns out that this is also the symbol of the little club in that grass hut where Kenji grew up. So
it's the symbol they invented, but Kenji doesn't remember that until
he doesn't really remember it. Some of his friends, there's a reunion, and they sort of have a reason to get together and start discussing this stuff. But essentially, the plot boils down to there's a group of friends, and one among them, or in their group, or someone close to them, is now running a giant cult that seems to be bent on world domination.
Right, and the cult leader wears kind of a mask that has the club symbol over the top of it, so you don't know who he is, and they can't remember who from their group of friends in elementary school this guy is, like who it was who would have known about the club, who would have adopted the symbol and become this cult leader.
So Kenji, after some initial reluctance, ends up sort of taking it on as his personal crusade to unmask this individual and undo their evil plans. And save the world, which it is then discovered to be following the same course of events as was written in their little clubhouse storybook, The Book of Prophecies. And so the cult is clearly drawing from the same material,
right,
to try and, you know, destroy the world or control the world. And the ultimate motivation and agenda of this cult leader who calls himself Friend
yeah,
is veiled. But
it's clear that
they are up to no good.
Yeah, and in the manga and in the movies, it's important to note that, like, some people have real psychic powers. Like, whoever Friend is someone who... That doesn't come up in the movie.
We don't know.
He bent all the spoons at lunchtime. But the baby is supposed to have some kind of psychic ability.
Yes, so Kana, the daughter of Kenji's sister, clearly has some kind of psychic potential.
Right.
So this is a world... Firstly, it's a world with an alternate history because, you know, Friend did not rise to notoriety in the mid-90s, but also because there are psychic powers and possibly technologies that don't otherwise exist in the real world. So it is science fiction, or at least alternate history.
Right. So the manga is by the same author who did Monster, and also
Pluto,
and he's a really important manga artist, Naoki Urasawa, who you should all know, who his art is really excellent. Like, his manga has a really, like, clean look to it, and all the characters are very realistic looking. Pluto, I really like it. I like Pluto a little bit more than 20th Century Boys, but I think my expectations for 20th Century Boys were really through the roof, because I'd heard so much about it and how great it was, and I flipped through it in Japanese bookstores. And also the coolest cosplayer I know, whose name is Ada. She was a super good Blackjack cosplayer when you're at Anime Next, and wrote me a prescription where she also billed me for like 1,000,000 yen.
Yeah.
She, at Otakon one year, cosplayed as a 20th Century Boys character. So she wore the suit. I think she was supposed to be Friend, but she just had the mask as like a drop down sheet of paper so she could like lift it up and still see where she was going.
Yeah.
But at first I was like, I know that's from something I've seen, I don't know what, and I chased her down to ask, like, what is that from? And she was like, oh, it's from 20th Century Boys.
Yeah.
And when she was in Germany, the Germans were like, you haven't read real manga because you don't have 20th Century Boys in the US yet. And so it seemed like this very pivotal and important title, and I do like the manga. But I'm a little bit disappointed in kind of where it's going if the movies are such
any
a direct
indication.
Adaptation. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the first thing that I've read where I got the real Akira vibe, because nothing has stood up to Akira.
You read all of the Akira manga?
Yeah, I read all of it. Okay. And nothing has come close to that level of intensity for me, at least, or intelligence. Mm. And I was starting to get those Akira vibes. But by volume 3 of the manga, it's kind of dissipating. And I was not terribly impressed by the films. The 1970 material with all the
excellent.
Kids is all super good. The kids
great.
Are great actors. It's adorable and very intelligent. And the source material, or I guess the idea behind it, I think is
it's good.
Really excellent.
Yeah.
And pushes so many of my buttons, not the least of which... It has these people perhaps growing up with some kind of a proto-totalitarian dictator or something. The idea that these larger-than-life dictators, these people who develop cult of personality, they're still humans, and they had, you know, they had classmates and people who knew them while they were growing up, and then would go on to become these enormous larger-than-life figures.
The part about, I like there's like the underlying theme about rock and roll, where Kenji, when he hears rock and roll, it changes his life. And like, that's a really important theme of the film. And like, when he plays his guitar, and I don't think it necessarily comes through in the film though, like, but in the manga, they really emphasize like, when he picks up a guitar, he feels like he can conquer the world or he can do anything.
Yeah.
And so in the film, there's a pivotal scene where he knows what he has to do and he runs to his friend's house where he's apparently stored his guitar or hidden it or something and plays really loudly because now he's going to gear up to save the world. And that's the only way he can like build up his strength, which I think is nice. But it does, there is that kind of disappointment, you know, where like, the rock in the 60s and 70s was sort of like, the world is changing and whatever. I don't know if it delivered on its promise.
Well, I think it did in America far more than it did in Japan.
Yeah.
And I think that it's, at least in the film, it really comes through that I take it to be an enormous critique of the music scene in Japan, mm-hmm. where he sees there's a concert being held by
the
friend, and everyone is chanting and clapping in time with the musicians on stage.
Who look like a visual K band.
Yeah, really. who look like, you know, Shibuya K types. And Kenji.
Anyway.
What?
Visual K is different than Shibuya K. Shibuya K is just Shibuya style.
Aren't they like, Shibuya style?
They're visual K style. They're not exactly visual K.
All right, anyway. I don't know.
I really don't know
anything about fashion.
Or possible.
But Kenji bursts in and he takes in this scene and says, you know, this is not rock, meaning rock is about rebellion. It's not about conformity.
Right.
And everyone was conforming
In the manga, you also get a scene where they have unfunny comedians and everyone is laughing. And I think that gets through more of like...
Yeah, very definitely.
This feeling like they're under some kind of hypnotic brainwashed thing. And like they didn't do that scene in the movie.
Yeah.
But they did the awesome scene that I forgot from the manga that had like the snapping guy.
Oh, there's another cult leader who I don't know if he's really, if he has this, it's really awesome in the film. And it was one of the really good scenes in there where there's this other cult of personality guy whose shtick is like snapping his fingers. And so he does this snapping dance and then one of the cult's assassins comes and sticks a knife in him.
It's a really short scene in the film, but it's probably the best scene in the film because it's like a David Lynch moment where like it's just really weird and then like violent or someone gets violently killed. And I think like that moment was like captured this great just bizarreness that like the rest of the film doesn't really deliver on at all.
Yeah, which is a big shame, but it just
The
second movie is just totally a mess.
Yeah. You get the real feeling like someone's
got
fireworks
shot.
From the 4th of July. But like the second movie, you get the real feeling like the manga was really supposed to end where the first movie ends. and it didn't. It looks
because
like
it
really
got too popular.
Got too popular,
which is
going.
The nature of the genre.
Right.
Although maybe not. Maybe, I mean, we haven't read that far in the manga. Maybe it's just really divergent in the films.
I kind of doubt it.
Well, I mean, don't know.
Ed kind of always is a proponent that no manga is good after volume four. That, like, everyone plots out their story to a certain, like, kind of volume four level, and if the manga is really popular, it keeps going, and it's no good.
Which makes me tear my hair out.
But then, like,
that to me is just totally unacceptable.
But it means like something like Naruto is like the opposite, because it doesn't even get good till volume four, because they're thinking more, they're thinking further in advance, like they're thinking in the 20 volume range or more, you know, that it's like a longer term commitment.
I don't know how closely the manga follows the first 30 episodes that we had a hard time getting
through.
Imagine
the anime has a lot of like flashbacks that aren't in the manga, but the first volume of the Naruto manga, pretty lame.
Pretty weak.
Pretty weak. They don't even, they set up for their test with Kakashi and they don't even finish it in the first volume.
Mm.
It's so horrible.
Yep. Yep. Problematic.
So boring.
Problematic. One of the reasons why, you know, I don't read so much manga. I kind of resent that.
But at least you don't get all those filler arcs.
Well, you don't get the, yes, that's true, but you just, there's a way that stories are supposed to work. God damn it.
That's just your
You're
Western
to have,
imperialist
yes, that's,
white male standpoint.
And I love it, and it's important to me. You
okay.
should structure a story. Stories should have a beginning, middle, and an end.
Well, I mean, the story
an
structure...
end, a satisfying end.
But the story structure is dictated in large part by the way these stories are being consumed. And the consumption patterns for manga don't call for a strong ending. Actually, Hollywood films in the last 5 years have not generally drawn to satisfying
That's
conclusions.
Why I've stopped watching them mostly.
I guess box office has been really bad. Like
no, the box office has been fine.
Oh, okay.
Past couple
I thought
of years,
the ticket sales were declining. That's why the price of tickets keeps going up.
Well, that's probably true, but
because they can't get audiences in seats,
they're making them up in volume.
But somehow. I think that Hollywood likes to blame like HDTVs and people having great home theaters. But
in
reality, it's like
and so forth.
Yeah, but actually, no, movies have just really sucked.
Yeah,
like hardly any good movies come out, and so why would you waste your money spending like $13 on a ticket? Like,
well, and it's quite possible that as a whole, people are demanding new forms of narrative, and to
like
that,
in
I
video
say,
games where you play for 60 hours and there's no satisfying ending.
I say halt. I stand athwart the march of narrative progress, shouting halt.
Good job.
Well,
it's gonna run you over like
didn't
a
didn't
train.
Work for the New Republic either. Really, I mean. Progress is here, whether we want it or not.
Mm.
But it's, you don't, you ought not go into a story having no idea how it ends as a reader or as an author.
I don't think that should let you, I don't think you should let that stop you from writing stories. I think there are probably plenty of authors in history who like didn't write their ending first, or like didn't know where it was going when they went into it.
You don't have to write your ending first, but you have to.
You should make it come to an ending.
Let me put it a different way. You should have an ending. You should, as an author, you are responsible for an ending.
Okay.
And that's not the case in manga.
Nope. Because the ending is when it gets canceled.
Yeah. And then whatever.
I think a really...
That's not totally true.
Really great...
Akira has an ending.
Maybe it was produced under different circumstances than regular manga.
It's possible.
I really enjoy the ending of the Speed Racer manga, which is reprinted in two very nice hardcover volumes by Digital Manga. But you can tell instantly that the series was canceled because they wrap all the loose ends in like two pages. There's my alarm clock in. Where they instantly reveal who Racer X is and then that's it. I mean, that was the ending the author had in mind the whole time, but they had to be able to end the series at short notice.
At the drop of a hat.
Yeah. It was in a newspaper originally, I think.
Thumbs down. Thumbs down to all of that. And indeed, I wonder how much of it isn't, again, the blame can be laid, and for me it is blame, because these are not the stories that I like, the ones that are meandering and so forth. I wonder how much blame can be laid at the doorstep of fan fiction, because fan fiction is now a massive force both in production and consumption, and fan fiction is never about how it ends. It's always about the journey.
But I don't think...
Thumbs down to you.
No, I think that, you know, if you're going to look at the roots of manga and why it doesn't have proper endings, like, it's serial entertainment in magazines. Like, the point is either
to
extenuate the series or to stop it. I don't think that that's what a lot of fanfic authors have in mind. their fanfic authors are not thinking, now I have to add a new chapter to my story next week. I think it's, now I have to write another story for next week. I think they're usually much shorter works, unless it's a fan-produced novel. I mean, I don't even read fanfiction. I'm just saying you're way off on this. Also, don't mess with fanfic.
I know, because they'll come up, they'll come after you. They'll come after you.
You can't blame fanfic for the problems with manga narrative. That's ridiculous.
No, no, no. No, I'm not talking about...
You're blaming fanfiction for why movies don't end properly?
Yeah, I'm blaming fanfiction for why there is so much less demand for...
good endings?
Concise ending.
I think that, like, it's not the lack of demand. I think it's how much movies cost to make in America. Like, a typical Hollywood production, I think, is now so overblown in its budget that... Like, and there's not room for experimentation. Like, producers don't want to take risk. They want a known property that they know will make X number of dollars at box office. And it doesn't really matter how it ends. What matters is how much money you make in 2 weeks.
Look, I know the real reason. The real reason has nothing to do with fan fiction, which is just something I like to complain about. The real reason is that everything has to be left open,
for a sequel?
Just like manga, okay. For a sequel, if it's popular enough.
Mm.
That's the reason.
I suppose.
And that's bad.
But doesn't
it's
explain,
a crime against narrative.
It doesn't explain some of the most heinous endings I can think of, like the ending of the movie AI or the ending of Shrek. I guess Shrek has a lot of sequels, but AI had, it was based on a short story and had like the worst ending I've ever seen.
Based on a short story,
like
it got thrown
endings.
Out the window. The short story got thrown out the window.
True, and it had two
There's almost nothing from that short story in there. The point of the short story is the opposite of the point of the movie.
Mm.
Ah.
Anyway. I also saw the movie, the Korean Antique Bakery feature film, which Noah did not see. It is not a movie for straight men, let me tell you that.
Yeah.
They do a really good job of closely adapting the manga, but it's shot really weird. There are a lot of crazy close-ups, a lot of pastry montages. I guess you expect pastry montages in Antique Bakery, and you get that. And hot guys, and there are a lot of hot guys in that film, including, like, the French guy in the film, super hot. I think his name is Andrew Gillette. I've never seen him in anything. He's a mega hottie. And also all of the Korean guys, like the guy playing Chiaki, way, way hot. Like, and then there are just tons of shots of dessert. Like, it's a movie only for girls and gay men. Like, forget about it. It's also really, it's funny. Some of the dancing pastry chefs reminded me of the dancing scenes in The Big Lebowski, where there's like that abstract bowling scene with the dancers. Like, there are a couple scenes like that. But, It's a weird weird story and a very direct adaptation, except for, you know, set in Korea. So there you go. Did you keep wanting to talk about 20th Century Boys?
I have nothing to say. No, because, I mean, a lot of what I have to say about 20th Century Boys kind of requires an audience that has seen it, and it is quite new. I don't wish to ruin everything
for
everyone.
You can't
actually
have seen it unless you're, like, in Japan.
Yeah, and it's also, has the series wrapped up? I mean, has the manga wrapped up? I know that it's...
I don't know.
Only three volumes have been published in English here.
Yeah, but I think in Japan it might have been over, like, a long time ago.
Okay.
But I'm not really sure.
Want to reserve some judgment for actually being able to read the end of the series.
We haven't watched Monster or read it. We probably should.
Yeah, we definitely should have done that.
Dave.
But there's a lot of stuff that we should see that we haven't seen.
True.
Still. What can you do?
I don't know. Something else you want to talk about?
No, I think that's good. That's kind what, like 9 hours worth of material there?
No, not quite. Kind of a boring episode. Are we requesting anything, like, to people to write to us or anything like that? Not really. I don't know. I think I would like to get more, voicemail from viewers.
Listeners.
More listener voicemail. And more listener voicemail. And also, our Skype account is active again. So if you Skype Ninja Consultant, you can leave us a voicemail. And maybe we'll play it on the show, since we haven't been getting a lot of them. Our new voicemail number is 206-338-3790, and it's on our website at ninjaconsultant.com. If you're only listening to the show and, like, never checking the website, don't write to me and ask if we've given up on podcasting. Like, check the website first. Yeah, 206-338-3790. Tell us what you're watching and what you think Noah should watch, and like an argument as to why he should watch it. We're happy to hear anything.
Yeah.
Or your complaints about, you know, Noah's complaints about fanfiction.
Always call and tell me where to stick it.
Yeah. We like to hear from people. Writing us email is also good.